Man, candle lighting, stand up, sit down. I think I just had a Catholic flashback. Thank you, Thomas. I love that song. I love that song. Anyway. This morning I'm going to talk about peace, but I want to talk about peace in a slightly different way than I usually do. There are a lot of people who are talking today with a new attitude in the new administration in Washington about things like pulling out of Iraq and opening diplomatic ties with Iran and sending a special envoy to the Middle East, and all those things are great. That's all fine. Because it's good to take active and measurable steps to encourage people to stop fighting or maybe even to get along. But I was also thinking that we have been doing these kind of things for a long time now, and the results, even when they turn out well, don't seem to last. They just don't seem to last for some reason. Even though we have chosen during this season for nonviolence to celebrate the power of peace, it's hard not to notice that when we look around the world, peace is still in short supply. I mean, there are wars and rebellions and military occupations taking place on every continent except Antarctica, I think. There are innocent people being killed every day for no reason by guns, bombs, missiles, landmines, machetes, spears, and stones. There are refugees, including women, children, and the elderly, who have been driven from their homes and are dying by the millions in camps from disease, starvation, and the neglect of the international community. There are wars being waged because of politics, religion, money, oil, water, land, race, just to name a few of the more obvious and more popular points of conflict. The sad thing about it is, even though all of these things are happening right now, every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, around the clock, many of us here have no firsthand experience of how bad things really are. All we have to go on are news reports and stories and the occasional picture. And in some ways, sometimes I think it's hard to tell the difference between the news and the latest war movie that just came out. The only difference is the movies have limits on their brutality because of the censors, while human beings don't seem to have such limits. Now, even so, with all of that, those of us in spiritual communities like this one who recognize that we are all connected, not just here, but across the planet, those of us who understand that we are all brothers and sisters at the spiritual level, we know in our heart that something needs to be done. We'd like to help, we really would. We'd like to know who to call, where to send money, or what we can do. But because we seem to have inherited a world where all of us live in such isolation from one another, separated by nationality, race, and religion, our perception seems to be that we who are safe and secure on this side of the world are helpless to make a difference on the other side of the world. That seems to be the underlying belief in this country. And until we realize that this is not the truth, nothing is going to change. You see, one of the most significant differences between teachings like this one and the more traditional Western religions that most of us grew up in is how powerful we believe that we, in fact, are. In the old-time religions, we were taught that God was in charge and we were just these helpless cogs sort of living the life that we assigned. So if something terrible happened in our world or happened to us or to our family or to our tribe or to our country, that was just the way it was supposed to be because there was a divine plan for humanity. That's what we were taught. And our job was to follow that plan and not ask any questions. So things like disease or natural disasters or wars were all part of God's plan. That's what they told us. Now, some people believe that wars were a punishment from God inflicted upon a country that wasn't doing what God wanted. Some people believe that wars were fought between the forces of good and the forces of evil, and their side always seemed to be the good one. That was it. Some people believe that dying in battle was a good way to get into heaven. Some people still believe these things. That's why wars keep happening. What all these beliefs have in common, however, is the idea that conflict and violence are natural human conditions, either inflicted or supported by God. But in this teaching, we do not believe that at all. In fact, we believe that human suffering is almost always the result of choices made by everyone, by those who suffer, by those who inflict the suffering, and by those who are able to alleviate the suffering, whether they do so or not. And before anyone gets upset, I am not saying that when someone is a victim of violence or conflict, that they chose it or that it's their fault. This is not about blaming the victim, because it's not that simple. But what we can say is, if we think about it in a mental and spiritual way, we can say that violence, as a cause of human suffering, and the choices that are made or not made to either reduce or to increase that suffering, is something that we're all a part of. That violence is something we are all a part of. Because if we are all one, if we're all connected at the spiritual level, then anything that happens to any one of us anywhere happens to us all. And anything that any one of us does to anyone else, we do to ourselves. So when we help someone, we help ourselves. When we ignore someone's pain, we also suffer, even though we may not realize it at the time. So any conflict that appears in the physical world is all of us fighting against our own fears. It's kind of like a puppy attacking himself in the mirror because he thinks it's an enemy. That's what we do. That has to be the truth at the spiritual level, which is the only level that really matters, because there is no conflict in the mind of God. That's what we got to get. There is no conflict in the mind of God. And infinite intelligence must always be a power for peace, because if it wasn't, it would have destroyed itself long before this. That's why, before we can see through the illusion of violence as a natural and necessary part of life, which it is not, before we can get to that place in consciousness where peace resides, we have to have a clear understanding of what we are dealing with. So here it is. What we call war, as horrible as it is still just an experience in the material world. The same is true of slavery. The same is true of dictatorship and intimidation and police brutality. It's the same for abuse, for racism, sexism, homophobia, mob violence, and any other mental, emotional, or physical action, not just the physical, mental, emotion, or physical action, used to injure, control, or humiliate another person. Those are all forms of violence. But they are also what we call effects or conditions in the physical world. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not painful. It doesn't mean they aren't unjust. It doesn't mean they don't need to be stopped. They should all be stopped. It simply means that these things, we have to understand, are external manifestations of an internal cause. And that is where our efforts to create a peaceful world need to be directed, not just out there, but in here. You see, from a mental and spiritual perspective, the inner cause of all violence has to be a state of consciousness that believes in the false idea that power comes from brute strength, threat of violence, or physical control. So it is a fear-based belief that tries to instill fear in other people in order to control them. Unfortunately, fear expressed as violence almost always results in a violent backlash, which is also based on fear. And because fear is blind, we say love is blind, fear is worse. Because fear is blind, once we get caught up in a mutual act or a mutual dance of destruction, we all become victims of our own fearful thinking. That's one reason why when we hear Mahatma Gandhi or Dr. King talk about nonviolence, or when we read their writings on nonviolence, I'm not sure that we understand what those words really mean. Because nonviolence does not just mean not fighting back or not attacking anyone. It's a lot more than that. The reason nonviolence has been such a powerful tool in India in the 1940s, in the American Civil Rights Movement in the 50s and the 60s, and in other places in the world since then, the reason it has been such a powerful tool is because nonviolence requires the person practicing it to change themselves completely on the inside, at the level of their thoughts and emotions and inner being, so that they interact with those who are being violent against them, the people out there, in a way that transforms them both. In a way that transforms them both. That is spiritual practice in its purest and most powerful form. Now, Dr. King said it this way. This was in the 1950s, even before the 60s started. He said, "Nonviolence is ultimately a way of life that people live by because of the sheer morality of its claim. It does not seek to defeat or to humiliate the opponent, but to win his friendship and understanding. It avoids not only external physical violence, but also internal violence of the spirit. The nonviolent resistor," this is Dr. King talking, "not only refuses to shoot his opponent, he also refuses to hate him." And then he finishes by saying, "It is based on the conviction that the universe is on the side of justice, is on the side of justice." Now, we don't believe that God is on anybody's side, so I would rephrase that last sentence to say that the universe is always in balance and that God is a power for good, but the idea remains the same. Peace begets peace. Violence begets violence. Inner peace becomes outer peace, and inner violence or anger or blame or fear creates more of the same in the outer world. Now, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about how mean or angry or arrogant people cause wars, and how enlightened beings like Gandhi and Dr. King and Nelson Mandela and many, many others, how these people were able to see beyond the injustice and the hatred to transform the world. We think that that's wonderful. We admire the peacemakers. We put their pictures up in our office. We quote their speeches. We read their biographies, and we feel all warm and fuzzy inside when we see the pictures and we hear about them. But none of what they did, which was a lot, none of what they did matters if we don't apply it to our daily life. That's what I want to talk about now. The lesson we need to learn is that in the physical world, power does not depend upon size. In fact, the greater almost always comes from the smaller. A tree comes from a seed. Our body comes from two small cells. The invention that changes the world comes from a single idea, and social change comes from one woman on a bus who said, "No, no." This is a spiritual principle, and it's the same principle that says peace on earth, on the entire earth, can only come when each one of us has cultivated that seed, has cultivated peace in our own heart and our own mind. The greater peace has to come from the smaller. Now, the truth is, and we all know it, if every person on earth woke up tomorrow morning, 6.5 billion people, and decided to accept everyone around them exactly as they are, decided not to judge anyone, and decided to do what they could do to help their neighbors and to not say anything if they couldn't say anything nice, just like their grandmother taught them, okay, that much, all wars would end overnight. Absolutely overnight, it's true. And this world that we have made such a mess of would become a virtual paradise in a very short time. I mean, we have everything we need to create heaven on earth. We have the land and the expertise to grow all the food we need to feed everybody. We have enough room for everyone to have their own space. We really do. We have the ability to create medicines and to heal diseases and to educate our children. We have the ability. We can create alternative fuels and clean up the atmosphere. All of these things and more are possible. Whenever we decide to set aside our differences, we can do all these things. But doing things will not bring us peace. Instead, we have to learn to live peacefully with one another before we can do these things. In order to make all these things happen, we all have to be completely invested in knowing, first of all, that it's possible. That's what we got to know first. And then we need to move through the world and through our daily life, practicing inner peace and understanding at such a level that we judge no one, we blame no one, and we forgive everyone. Everyone. You see, creating a world without violence is not about doing things. It's about being something that we can all be. It's about being the thing that we wish to see, as Gandhi said so beautifully. It's about being peaceful in here until peace becomes popular out there. And that's a pretty tall order, but that's what we need to do. So now let's talk for a few minutes about how to do it. How do we develop and maintain a calm and peaceful consciousness that allows us to stay centered no matter what happens around us? In other words, how do we find peace of mind? That's really what the question is. And whenever I hear this question, I also know right off the bat that there are some people whose minds are closed who believe that this is not possible. They say that there are too many tragic events, too much suffering, and too many annoying people in their life and in the world for anyone in their right mind to feel calm for 10 minutes, let alone peaceful and happy for a lifetime. And I smile inside when I hear someone say that, because there are stories throughout history, in all of the sacred literature that we read about teachers in every religion who have used these ideas to make a point, to make a point. In the Buddhist tradition, there's a story about a man who decided that he was going to follow the Buddha around and he was going to make him lose his cool. That was his decision. So for 3 days, he followed him around, harassing him, interrupting him, disrupting his lessons and his talks, and the Buddha remained as calm as ever. And finally, the man came to him and he said, "Master, how could you stay so kind and patient when I was so annoying?" And the Buddha said, "Your anger was yours. I simply refused to accept it. I simply refused to accept it." In the Christian Bible, many of us were raised with, not all of us, but many of us were told, remember the story of Jesus, the teacher Jesus, calming the storm. Remember that? All of us remember that story. Now, it may or may not be true, but it's a marvelous metaphor. When the boat started sinking and his followers came to get him because they were afraid, did they find him praying for peace and for all these other things? No. How did they find him? The man was sleeping. He was sleeping. He was resting. And we are told that he walked on deck and he raised his hand and the storm stopped and the water became smooth. And the apostles said, "What kind of man is this that even the wind and the storm obey him?" What they didn't realize was the weather was not obeying Jesus because he was God. It was responding to a mind that was completely at peace and without fear. It was responding to that. If he was afraid, nothing would have happened. It would have just kept on going the way it was, which kind of leads me to wonder, this is sort of a side thought when I was writing, could it be our fear of these horrible hurricanes like Katrina and that's making them worse? Who knows? It's certainly a thought. When Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated, when he was shot, his last act in that moment was to bring his hands together in prayer and to forgive his assassin as he died. As he died. Now, you can't do that kind of thing with an angry or fearful mind. Only a mind that knows the truth, only a mind that has decided to be at peace all the time can respond in such a way at such a moment. The truth is, we can no longer afford the luxury of being afraid of everyone and everything, even if we call those fears caution, safety, and rational behavior. We don't say we're afraid, we say we're being careful. All that does is keep us separated from the people we fear. So I was thinking, maybe it's time that some of us started taking a risk, maybe even acting a little crazy. We could do that. We have to let go of the conflict in our own mind and allow peace to prevail in here, and then we need to replace our old fears with some powerful new beliefs that thrive in a peaceful environment. Now, a few suggestions for peaceful replacements would be the obvious ones: love, compassion, forgiveness, a sense of humor. That's always nice and peaceful. And once we get those in place, then we can start working on kindness, non-judgment, and patience. One of my favorites. Been working on that one for a year. Now, notice, these are all feelings that come from inside. They come from our spiritual center, but they need to be expressed on the outside in order to have any meaning. Every time something frightens us, it is an opportunity to practice peace of mind. Every time someone makes us angry, it is an opportunity to practice peace of mind. Every time we become impatient, every time we blame someone for something that they said they were going to do and they didn't, it is an opportunity to practice peace of mind. Every time we find ourselves becoming annoyed, irritated, or victimized is an opportunity to practice peace of mind. Every time we beat up on ourselves, or we call ourselves stupid, or we criticize ourselves for not doing enough is another opportunity to practice peace of mind. Now, with all these opportunities to practice, you kind of think we'd be better at it, wouldn't you? You know? But you would think we would be floating around 6 inches off the ground with these Buddha smiles on our face, helping people, feeling all enlightened. But since that doesn't seem to be the way that things are, the only conclusion that I can draw is that we are not paying attention. Or maybe we are paying attention, we're just not paying attention to the right things. Maybe we are so frightened of what we think is out there that we are completely ignoring the power and the possibility that lies in here. Maybe we are focusing our emotional and intellectual energy on people and events that need to be dealt with rather than focusing our spiritual energy on the way we see those events. Seeing the world as a loving place that occasionally becomes confused is a much more powerful vision than seeing the world as a dangerous place that needs to be controlled. And seeing people as loving spiritual beings who sometimes forget who they are is a much more powerful feeling than feeling that we have to protect ourselves all the time. Now, sure, sometimes we do need to protect ourselves when confusion and illusion show up as violence. Even Gandhi said something to the effect that if your family or your country was violently attacked, then it was justifiable to defend both with violence if nothing else worked. If nothing else worked. But as I always like to say, it isn't so much what we do, it's the consciousness we do it with. So here's what we need to do. If we begin right this moment, today, always a good time to start, accepting, embracing, practicing, and expressing, accepting, embracing, practicing, and expressing a peaceful mind and a loving attitude towards ourselves, towards the world, and everyone in it, at every level, in every place, no matter what the circumstances, our life and our world will begin to change. And soon, our consciousness will begin to spread, and it'll join with others until we have created an entirely new default mode for humanity, where our first reaction to violence is not violence, but peaceful understanding and open dialogue. That's how it'll change. Now, there's no reason this can't happen, because what we call the world is simply a reflection of the consciousness of everyone living in it. So as our consciousness changes, so do others, and so does the world. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of looking forward to the day when I read a headline that says, "Peace breaks out all over the world." Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a great headline, you know? But until that happens, I will be happy when I know that peace reigns supreme in my own mind and in the mind of everyone I know. Because when that happens, then we will know that change has begun. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a few moments to ourselves, for ourselves. Relax, take a deep breath, take the ideas that resonated, and let us recognize that we are powerful beings in our own right. Each one of us is an individual expression of the one power that created all things, and we are capable of creating things not just for ourselves, but to create a greater idea in the world. This idea that we call peace, this idea of security and calm and joy and happiness for every person is not based on what we see on the outside. It comes from within. So today, in this moment, all of us focus our attention on peace of mind for ourselves, being able to breathe deeply, to relax, to release the power that we have given to other people over our emotions and to reclaim that power for ourselves, to claim the ability to be calm and at ease no matter what happens in traffic, in family situations, in arguments, wherever it is. Whenever fear is around, whenever anger is around, we smile and watch it dissipate as it comes near us because we create an atmosphere that surrounds us that will not accept these things as a part of our life and a part of our consciousness. So as we do this, we notice that things around us change. Our body is more relaxed. Our spirit is more joyful. Our mind is more at ease. All of these things happen easily simply by focusing on peace as the only thing we accept. So I invite you now, in the silence of your own heart and mind, to take just a few moments for yourself here. And in this silence, I invite you to take one thing in your life that bothers you, whether it's a person, a place, or a thing, and see that thing and allow yourself to release it, to release all emotion and attachment to it, to recognize that you have now chosen peace over that person, place, or thing. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own, we embrace it, and we release it now into consciousness, letting it do its good and perfect work for us in our life from this moment on. And so it is.